On Tech News Today, iWatch, how about iWatches? It looks like Apple's going to ship more than one. And Google releases more information about its Android Wear smartwatch and wearables operating system, and we'll show you the video. Plus, Congress surprises everyone by cracking down on NSA surveillance. All that and more coming up right now on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Friday, June 20th, 2014. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free two-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TNT. Tech News Today is the show where we talk about the tech news with the journalists who report it. Welcome to the show. I'm Mike Elgin. Jason Howell is off this week. Alex Gumpel is filling in for Jason. And I'm joined, of course, by co-anchor Don Reisinger. Well, it's actually not, of course. Hey. You were originally going to be switching with Elise Hu. She was going to be here Friday, but she got delayed in her flights.
That's
got
right.
Became a big mess, and so you stepped in to do your usual Friday.
The old bait and switch. That's what they call it.
That's right. That's you right. Know? I'm not sure who was baited, but I know who was switched. So are you excited about the Surface Pro 3, the Microsoft's latest tablet is coming out today?
No.
Are you a Surface Pro 3 guy? No?
No.
Why not?
Please, God, no. No. I'll tell you what. I'm honestly not even that big of a tablet guy. I have a bunch of tablets. It's weird. I have this weird thing where I buy tablets and then I don't use them. I think I'm like maybe I'm a tech addict or something, and I really need to be helped.
You're the perfect customer is what you are. You never need tech support because you don't use the product.
Exactly. But no, I mean, look, it's a cool looking product, has a lot of neat features, but I just don't think Windows is there. Windows 8 especially is there. Windows 8.1 is there. So I'm not interested, but you know, we'll see how it goes.
All right. Well, we're going to talk about a lot of gadgets, a lot of mobile gadgets today, and we'll see if we can find one that you'll actually use, Don Reisinger. Yeah. So let's start with the first
one. I'll buy it. I just won't use it. That's all. Yeah.
That's the important thing, really. Yeah. Well, the Wall Street Journal is reporting this morning that Apple is planning to launch multiple versions of its long-rumored smartwatch. Devinder Hardawar is a senior editor and the lead mobile writer for VentureBeat and joins us to talk about the upcoming Apple iWatch. Welcome, Devinder.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me again.
So glad you're here. Now, a smattering of highly credible reports have emerged this week that paint a surprising picture of Apple's smartwatch. The most recent one is the one that I mentioned, which is that it'll ship in more than one size or more than one configuration. And then also they said it would contain 10 different sensors. So if this report is true, and it probably, you know, Wall Street Journal's very credible with these things, what does that tell you about Apple's intentions with the iWatch?
I think it's pretty much what we've been expecting. It's going to be, you know, a device that's really focused on tracking your activity and tracking your health. That's probably going to make up a whole bunch of those sensors. I've seen some people worry that, oh, no, like maybe Apple needs to create a device that only should stand on its own and doesn't need to be tethered to the iPhone. But I actually think it makes more sense for the iWatch to be more of a companion to the iPhone. So all those sensors could enable new things and apps and, you know, just all sorts of cool new things together with your iPhone. It's pretty much what we expected. I don't think there are any real surprises here.
Hey, Devendra, you know, I almost wonder if the iWatch is kind of, I don't know, more like a smartwatch or a smart band that has a watch functionality. It almost sounds that way. It almost sounds like, we'll just throw a clock on there and make it cool. You know, I mean, is the iWatch name more a marketing term than it is an actual functionality term? It almost sounds like that from these reports.
I mean, to be clear, right? iWatch is just something we've all made up. Everybody's made it up.
Right.
It's the most obvious potential name for it, but Apple could call it something else, so we don't know. But I think, you know, you raise a good point. Like, it is definitely combining the fitness trackers and the devices that already exist together with, you know, new smartwatch functionality. It actually reminds me a lot of what Apple did with the iPhone, which was, you know, a phone, an iPod, and something else as well. Just like it was a combination of three different devices. So I wouldn't be surprised to see them do something similar with the iWatch.
Well, this news that they're going to have multiple configurations
actually makes me feel a lot better, because I was feeling some anxiety about this smartwatch coming up. Because on the one hand, the fact that they had the, remember the iPod Nano was pitched by Bill Gates as something that could be a wristwatch. And Apple offered watch faces and wristbands in their stores and things like that. And it seemed kind of obvious that they were going to essentially do an iPod Nano type watch with a screen, with an interface, a touch screen, little apps, the whole bit. And so a full-featured watch seemed to be a natural for Apple. But then on the other hand, Apple seems, and Apple executives, including Tim Cook, CEO Tim Cook, who is actually on the Nike board and wears a Fuel band every day, seemed obsessed with this sort of bracelet, minimalist type of device. And so here it looks like they could do both. They could have bigger and smaller, and even potentially one that doesn't really have a significantly sized screen. So that actually makes me feel better, because it's, they're essentially going to do all of the above, which, by the way, is very uncharacteristic of Apple. Usually say they say, this is the phone. This is the only phone we have. And they go into a market where they're competing against the likes of Samsung that has 100 phones. And so here they are kind of doing what is not a Steve Jobsian kind of a move, which is kind of trying to satisfy multiple constituencies with a line of products rather than the single one and only product. Now, let's talk about these sensors. 10 sensors? That's a lot of sensors. What sort of thing will they be sensing?
Probably more than 10, actually. I think that was the direct line, right? I think it'll be things like, you know, the sensor just to detect your steps. There could be an altimeter to, you know, detect you climbing stairs. We can look at the health app that Apple announced at WWDC a couple weeks ago, and that kind of gives you some idea. So there may be some sort of heart rate monitor in there as well. You know, all sorts of potential things that could make Apple's whole health ecosystem kind of interesting. I don't know if we're going to see anything that's never been done before, but the key with this device is that it could be a single device that, like we've been saying, that does kind of everything. It does health tracking, you know, can be a great smartwatch. And surprisingly, too, we've actually seen Samsung do this and kind of roll out their Galaxy Gear devices over the past couple of year, or no, over the past year. It's funny to see Apple, you know, potentially following after Samsung, although I think Samsung actually responded to some of the rumors about Apple. So I don't know where this starts or ends.
Yeah. So let me ask you this question, because I'm not sure about it. Let's talk popularity. Is this thing going to be a big success? Is it not? The Wall Street Journal saying about 10 to 15 million units will ship. Reuters sources are saying 50 million.
I think that's too much.
Yeah. Where do you see it falling? Do you think it in the middle, somewhere closer to the Wall Street Journal, or something a little little bit less than that?
I mean, this is a device that's mainly going to appeal to people who already own iPhones. So it's not like a wider market like some of Apple's earlier stuff. I could see it easily making, you know, I think the 10 to 15 million estimate, I'm not sure if that was for this year or just for the first year of it actually being out. You know, that seems a little more reasonable than 50 million. And we'll see. Like, it actually, you know, it makes a lot of sense for Apple to offer different models, because they've never done a device like this that you're actually wearing. At that point, you're dealing with personal preferences, different wrist sizes, all sorts of things. The Reuters report yesterday had a 2.5-inch screen listed, and a lot of people were freaking out because that was actually kind of big. So, I think there's a good chance for Apple to find a good market here.
Yeah, I think that number was by the end of the year, 10 to 15. Mm-hmm. That was even more surprising. And so it hits the fall. But, you know, another question I have, and this is something that a lot of this, and it follows the theme that we've been talking about here. Apple has been historically loath to make products that you're not going to want to replace a year or two from now. A watch historically has been something you keep a long time. Obviously, it's a little different. It's a smartwatch, it's tech and all that jazz. But, you know, Apple relies very heavily on repeat business. And can an iWatch deliver the kind of repeat business that Apple wants? That was always one of the things when we talked about that Apple television. You know, people buy televisions for 10 years. They have televisions for 10 years. And that number's been going down in recent years. But still, it's a pretty long gap between purchases. Can the same thing happen with iWatch? And if so, is that an issue for Apple? Is that something that might get Apple to shy away from launching this kind of device?
honestly, like, I think the whole idea of the iWatch could be something that's replaceable even more often than your iPhone. You know, I don't know how often normal people, you know, I'm a super techie, so I like to upgrade every year, maybe multiple times a year. But, you know, normal folks, I think, are still keeping their iPhones well into their contract. So that's 2 years, maybe more. And unlike Android devices, you know, iPhones, iPads still work really well after a couple of years. You know, you're not really forced to upgrade as you are with some other competing right. devices. So I'm not sure how much, you know, this is a concern to Apple. But I do think, like, having, you know, a family of wearables is a good idea, because maybe you'd want to upgrade. Maybe you'd want to get different types of wearables down the line. You know, that could all be really interesting.
Now, Devendra, I'd like you to stick around for our next item, because, sure. of course, you specialize in mobiles. And this is another mobile story. So, Don, what is happening with the Android Wear universe? We learned something new today, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. We did. We learned something really big. Basically, Google came out today ahead of Google I.O. next week, and they launched a video on YouTube showcasing some of the features that we might be able to expect in Android Wear. Now, it was geared towards developers, and it was talking about the SDK, but it was an interesting video nonetheless, because it gave us a little more insight into the software and what we might expect from those wearable devices. Now, Devendra, what are your thoughts about this whole thing? What are your thoughts about the video, and what are your thoughts about what Google might say next week at Google I.O.?
Well, the video, yeah, it's definitely not something meant for normal consumers. It's kind of boring. It's from one of the people on the Android Wear team, I think, just kind of diving into, you know, the new sides of its, diving into its, like, notifications, the way, like, you can juggle different apps on it as well. Just kind of a look at the interface. I think it looks fantastic, just from what I'm seeing. You know, the big problem with smartwatches so far, especially something like Samsung's Galaxy Gear, is that they've tried to do so much. And, you know, on a tiny screen, it's really, you're really limited. You can't really do as much as you could on your smartphone. I think Samsung kind of went way too far. The Android Wear devices, on the other hand, look like, you know, they're really focused on being an extension of Android. Looks like Google Now is a big part of it. So it's going to be all about notifications and alerts and, you know, voice commands, I hear, is going to be a huge thing as well for actually dealing with all these notifications that you get. So I'm excited. I'm more excited than I've been for a new Android release, you know, in a long time.
To me, I mean, clearly there's no way to predict who is going to dominate this space, or in fact, if anyone will dominate this space. What's exciting to me is that Android Wear, combined with the fact that Apple's coming out with a so-called iWatch, these two companies will fully legitimize a category that's been essentially illegitimate for many, many years.
Sure.
And, you know, there's been so much chatter. I've been doing a lot of chattering myself about smartwatches over the last year or 2 years, and it just hasn't grabbed hold of the market. You know, the leading brand right now is Samsung. They've been coming out with lots of devices. They have multiple devices on multiple platforms, including their own Tizen operating system. It's kind of, you know, even though they're the top product, they're not really not catching the general consumer market on fire. But I think that combination of Google Wear and the companies that will support that, including Motorola and LG and others, and the iWatch will legitimize the industry, not only for Apple and Android Wear devices, but also for startups and others. I think people are going to start wearing watches again. Do you agree with that analysis?
I think so. You know, I'm very excited to see what happens in the smartwatch market now. But really, it all comes down to the fact that, you know, everybody has smartphones now, and that allows us to do things like have more connected devices out there. That's something that didn't really exist before for all the other smartwatch releases we've seen in the past. A couple companies have tried to do smartwatches, even Microsoft several years ago, if you guys remember that. I think, you know, the ecosystem is there in terms of devices. The, you know, consumers are ready for something that can, you know, open up new opportunities on their smartphones. And yeah, I think people are actually excited to definitely wear watches again, like you're saying. And you know what? The round smartwatch face on the on Android Wear, I think, is a smart move, because that looks like a normal watch. It doesn't look like a weird geeky gadget, and that's important for people.
I don't understand why anybody would have a square Android Wear watch. The round one is obviously so much better.
It looks great. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's another question for Apple. You know, when we go back to the iWatch discussion, will Apple have to follow suit and say, here's our round version of iOS that will be running on this iWatch? I mean, is that something they have to do? Because, you know, with the Moto Wear or the Moto 360, we've seen that now.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I don't think Apple is a company that's ever really looked at the competition and said, we have to do that. You could look at so many features that have been on Android for years, and only now they're showing up in iOS 8. Even the with the iPhone 4S, you know, they were a year late to LTE than everybody else. So I don't know if Apple really feels the same pressures as other companies may. I feel like Samsung is a far more defensive company like that, because they just kind of try to preempt what everybody else is doing. But I do think we'll see some really interesting form factors from Apple. You know, there's all the talk about what they're doing with graphene. There's a lot of talk about flexible displays. I would definitely love a smartwatch at some point that has a display that truly wraps all around your wrist. And that's something far beyond just, you know, a round watch face.
Yeah, and right, but of course, Apple is obsessed with circles. Even their new headquarters is round. They do round things where other people don't. And of course, the whole resurgence after Steve Jobs came back in the late 90s to Apple was essentially based on iTunes and the iPod. And the most signature feature of the iPod was the circular interface, which which was unusual in the market at that time. So I would be surprised if they don't at some point come out with a round watch, not as a response to the competition, but simply because they're obsessed with the Zen-like simplicity of circles.
And it also begs the question of, at what point should Apple start to care a little bit more about the competition? I mean, they're losing right now to Android simply because of quantity more than anything, of the number of devices. But, you know, I have been seeing a little bit of a change in Apple, I think. Apple has been playing catch up here and there. You know, with iOS 7, that was a major upgrade because they were really far behind. They've picked up on some ideas of Android with iOS. And I'm starting to wonder if it's time that Tim Cook and team start looking outside of Cupertino a little bit and say, you know what, there are some great ideas out there, and maybe it's time that we try to trump those and try to follow suit.
I mean, personally, I think that they have to become more like a regular company, if you will, simply because their visionary dictator is gone. And it used to be in the old days, Steve Jobs says, this is how it's going to be. I need this, you know, this is a guy who, you know, they were well into the manufacturing of the iPhone and had a type of plastic display. And he said, no, it's got to be glass. And they just did a 180 on that particular feature simply because one person said, no, this is how it's going to be. And that ability is gone. Now they're back to a regular company where different warring factions are fighting and arguing over which is the right way to go. And there's nobody. Yes, Tim Cook is the CEO. Yes, he can fire anybody in the company. But Steve Jobs had a legendary, almost worshipful role in that company where he could get away with things that nobody currently at Apple can get away with. And, you know, it's even at companies like Amazon or Oracle or places where they have the founder still in charge of the company, even those CEOs don't have the kind of just power that Steve Jobs had within Apple to dictate the direction of their product lines. And so I think it's inevitable that they're going to become a regular company. And I personally think that this news that they're going to have multiple form factors is a perfect example of that. I doubt that if Steve Jobs had been still in charge of the company over the last few years, that they would have more than one watch. There would be the one watch that Steve Jobs personally felt was the right watch, and that's the one I believe they probably would have shipped. But that's, of course, speculation. There's absolutely no way we're ever going to know one way or the other. So, Devendra Hardwar, what does this market look like a year from now? A year from now, so that let's say that the iWatch ships this year. Android Wear is, of course, going to be rolled out next week. What is the world going to look like next June?
I do think we're going to see a lot of smartwatches everywhere. We're going to see a lot of companies trying to get into this market who, you know, are probably doing this for the first time. And we're going to see a lot of junk. Like, that's usually what happens whenever a new market opens up. But I do think we're going to see some really interesting things happening with the iWatch, with some of these Android Wear devices. You know, Motorola's thing that they're showing off, that's the round watch face, I think looks fantastic. So I think we're going to be thinking about mobile in a really different way next year. And maybe eventually, like, the idea of having like a health tracker and a separate smartwatch, eventually it'll just be one wrist device that we'll all be talking about. And yeah, it'll be an interesting year for sure.
We're going to be heavily tracked. Our biometric information is going to be constantly uploaded. It's going to be weird. I hope that they come out with better sensors than just heart rate and sort of how many steps you took. Because right now everything does that. And enough already. I don't care about my heart rate or my steps. I'd like something a lot more interesting. I do want to wear a watch. I'm looking forward to all of these things that come out, and I'm hoping that this is an opportunity for startups to sort of leap ahead and sort of surprise everybody with something nobody's expecting.
That's the big thing.
Yeah,
third-party developers.
Absolutely. That's absolutely true. Devendra Hardwar is the senior editor and lead mobile writer for VentureBeat. He can be found at VentureBeat.com and on Twitter at Devendra. Thank you so much, Devendra, for coming on and joining us and giving us your insights about this market.
Thanks for having me,
thanks
guys.
A lot, Devendra. Thanks a lot.
Have a good one.
All right. In just a sec, we're going to tell you about something very surprising that the U.S. Congress did. They actually did the right thing. It's going to shock you. But first, I want to tell you about the greatest place in the world to build a website, which, of course, is Squarespace. Squarespace will build you a website that has the best design, the best hosting, and the easiest to use user interface, and it's completely mobile ready. If you're going to build a website nowadays, you can't assume that people are going to be using a laptop or a desktop computer, because probably more than half of the people who visit your site, statistically that's true, will be using a mobile device like a phone or maybe a tablet. And of course, Squarespace will display your website, no matter how you design it, perfectly on mobile devices. And so that's a fantastic feature. It's very easy to use Squarespace to build a website, but if you do need help, their help and tech support is available 24/7 via chat and email. Fantastic. If you want to raise money, you want to sell things, e-commerce is now available for all subscription plan levels. Squarespace, when I describe it, it sounds super expensive. It sounds like it's going to cost a fortune. It sounds like it's a high-end thing for rich businesses that have a lot of money to throw around. It's not expensive. $8 a month is where it starts, and that includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. Just the domain name alone will normally cost more than $8. But, of course, you don't have to pay anything to try it out. Start a free 2-week trial with no credit card required. Don't even have to send them your credit card, and you can start building your website. And you should check it out. You'll be blown away by how not only easy it is, but how fun it is to build a website on Squarespace. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, use the offer code TNT, because that'll get you 10% off the price. We thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. And remember that a better web awaits, and it starts with your new Squarespace website. Well, the U.S. House of Representatives has passed a ban on the funding of two NSA surveillance practices. Don Reisinger, I didn't see this coming. This is kind of shocking. Now, of course, this is not law. The House of Representatives passed it. The Senate still needs to look at it. But essentially what they did was they added an amendment to the 2015 Defense Appropriations Act, and it would ban two types of backdoor access that the NSA takes advantage of. The first is that it cuts off funding for searches of government databases for information on U.S. citizens. That's huge. The government has all these databases, and this would say, we're not going to give you a penny to have a program that uses those very databases that we already have possession of for searching for information on U.S. citizens. And the second one not only prohibits the NSA, but also the CIA from acquiring backdoors in online services and products. This is also stunning, because this requirement on the CIA may restrict their ability to search for, you know, foreign terrorist suspects and so on using backdoors that are forced on products. What I love about this, though, is that they seem to be acknowledging that the NSA's mass surveillance programs harm the U.S. economy in general and the U.S. tech sector in particular. And I think that that's an outrageous thing. That's the most outrageous thing, as far as I'm concerned, in all this, is because if you're going to have national security, you need wealth. You need to be a rich country. You can't drive all the business overseas and expect to remain secure and so on. If you look at what China does, everything that their surveillance and their sort of hacking does is all aimed at boosting the Chinese economy, not harming it. What did you think about this, Don Reisinger? This is quite a surprising state of affairs, isn't it?
Yeah, it's surprising, and it's a good first step. It's something that I think we all should be happy about, but it has a long, long way to go before it becomes real. And who knows what'll happen when new bills are passed and things are tossed in and things are, I don't know. I call me a cynic, call me whatever, but I'm always suspect of the government after what we've learned and after what we've seen on Capitol Hill. You know, I do think that there are some key factors here that we need to consider. Number one, obviously, we need to get through the Senate get through all that legislation. But number two, there were over 100 people, was 120-something people in Congress that said, no, we shouldn't be cutting funding to this. We should be continuing this. And I think we need to identify those people and really call them out for that and say, look, do you not realize what this is doing to not only our security and our privacy, but also to the technology companies like you mentioned, Mike? This is an abomination in many ways. And the very fact that we still have over 100 people that are saying, no, this is good for us, without clear proof that it actually is something that I think is extremely, extremely concerning. And I think that's going to prove to be an issue when it gets to the Senate. I think it's going to be a problem as some pork gets thrown into other bills. I think we're in a bad place by looking at that 123. So while I'm happy to see this happen, and there was bipartisan support, we need to mention that too. I'm happy to see this happen. However, I do feel as though with over 100 people in the House saying, no, this is not good, we need to continue funding this kind of thing, I feel like we're still in a really bad place, that these people still don't get it. They will not get it. And the only way to make them get it is to kick them out of office, essentially. And so what is it going to take? What is it going to take to get people to realize that this is an important issue? I just don't feel, again, that constituents around the country, all of us in the tech space and the people who follow it closely, we care about this stuff. We care about it a lot. But what about the average person who doesn't pay that much attention? It seems to me, based on how these people are voting, that those people don't care. Their constituents don't care enough. And so I think we as a tech community need to make it clear to those people why this is such an important issue.
I think that's exactly right. And I believe that the whole problem, very briefly, is that to tell people that the world is full of scary, horrible terrorists and that we need to surveil all the communication in order to catch the bad guys is very simple and easy to understand. The downsides of mass surveillance and of just, you know, secret agencies having complete records of everything everyone does is a more complex argument that requires some effort on the part of the listener to understand. So that's a big problem. Too many people get their news from idiot cable news shows that are shout fests and essentially vacuous in terms of actual grappling with the subjects, and more people should watch this show where we talk about
right,
the real
exactly.
issues. And so I think that's a big part of the problem. It's the media landscape is partly to blame. The citizenry is also partly to blame. But I agree with you. We need to get on the ball and protect our rights, and we need to hold those in Congress accountable. So, Don, on a more on a lighter note, what's going on with Microsoft?
Yes.
They kind of made a boo-boo today, didn't they?
Microsoft's full of boo-boos. I don't even know what's going on in Redmond. So there's a Surface Pro 3 user guide, as we talked about earlier. Surface Pro 3 is out, and it's, you know, look, if you want it, buy it. I'll get it. I won't use it. Look, in this user guide, four times the Surface Mini is mentioned. Now, the Surface Mini is vaporware, technically. It was something we've heard a lot of rumors about over the last several months, that this thing's coming. It'll probably come with about a 7 to 8 inch screen. It'll be ARM-based, so it'll be based on an ARM processor and not an Intel-based core processor like in the Surface Pro 3. And it was expected at last month's Surface event, and yet it never showed up.
Yeah, it was not only expected, the invitation deliberately hinted at something small, and it seemed pretty clear that they were fully intending to announce it and then changed their mind after the invitations went out.
Right. So now I reached out to Microsoft today. I said, look, what's going on with this thing here? You have four mentions of the Surface Mini, including one talking about the pen working with it, another talking about OneNote and its interaction with it. They have no comment. And which doesn't really surprise me, but it's an interesting thing considering the Surface Pro 3 and the Surface Mini were supposed to be out together. It was supposed to be Microsoft's entree into the lower end of the market to take on Amazon's Kindle Fire HDX and the iPad Air. It never happened. There are reports now that it could happen later this year. We don't know. It was a really odd thing, and you would think that Microsoft would have enough sense to go through there, look at it, and say, okay, let's take out the Surface Mini mentions maybe. I can't imagine what must be going on in Redmond today when all of the hoopla that they had hoped to have surrounding the Surface Mini is gone. It's gone. So, I mean, I don't know, Mike, what do you think about this? Do you think some heads are going to roll for this, or do you think this is just simply another Microsoft mistake that is going to be overlooked and we say, well, it's just Microsoft being Microsoft?
If heads rolled every time Microsoft made a blunder like this, there would be nobody with a head left in Redmond. They make a lot of errors like this. I think it's getting better. I think that they're going to get better. They seem to be slowly getting their act together. They've got in my opinion, a much better CEO now. Satya Nadella is much better than Steve Ballmer ever was. And so I think that they're going to get to the point where they have a lot more discipline and better marketing. In fact, I suspect that the delay of the Surface Mini is an example of that discipline. It's probably not a good time in the market for them to be coming out with a Surface Mini. The market is saturated. And if that Surface Mini has any flaws, user flaws, that would be criticized heavily in the press, then it gets a bad reputation. Bad reputations are almost impossible to get rid of once you've got it. They probably said, you know what, when we come out with this thing, this has to be perfect. And I think that is wise. It's the kind of thing, and again, this is very speculative, and I'm just talking about Microsoft culture and the politics of Microsoft more than the actual product announcement. But it sounds to me like Ballmer is the kind of person who said, no, we got to get it out there. And Satya Nadella seems like the kind of guy who's like, no, we need to hold back. As much as we want to get this out there, we need to hold back until it's perfect so that when it does go out there, everybody's talking about it positively. And right. So if that's in fact what they're doing, and again, I'm just guessing, that is probably the right thing to do. They have to get it right. They can't get it wrong. They can't afford to get it wrong. There's been too much bad moves around the Surface in general. And so they need to really get the Mini right, because that's going to be – it should be a very popular device when it comes out. It could be a very, very popular tablet for a small 7-inch tablet. So we'll see.
Yeah, I think we're going to be able to judge Nadella based on when they announced the Surface Mini. You talk about a saturated market. That's very true. But at the same time, we should expect Amazon to announce a new Kindle Fire later this year, probably in the fall. We should expect Apple to announce some new iPads, probably in the fall. And so when will Microsoft make its move? Because it doesn't want to get caught up before too close before those announcements. It doesn't want to get caught up in the middle. It doesn't necessarily want to be after, because then it's already being ignored and sales have already gone to other devices. So timing is everything here. And we'll see exactly what kind of executive Nadella is, I think, if and when that Mini is announced. Because if they get the timing wrong, that thing is dead to rights.
If you were to torture me with dental instruments, I'd tell you that they were going to ship it before the holidays, and just before, probably, you know, October, November. Because
can I torture you with dental instruments either way?
Sure, go ahead. I'm used to it. Everybody's doing it. Well, speaking of Microsoft, Microsoft is hinting that it's going to roll out its first ever Android phone on Tuesday. A post on the Nokia Conversations blog shows branding for the Nokia X line plus a countdown clock counting down to June 24th. The slogan, quote, green with envy, unquote, is also displayed on the post. The first Nokia X shipped before Microsoft bought Nokia's mobile device business in late April. This new phone, possibly called the X2, is the first Android phone that will ever be shipped by Microsoft. And to me, you know, we don't have to have a big conversation about this, because this is just a, you know, speculative blog post that looks like they're hinting at something. It's probably pretty clear that the next X phone is going to ship. But I think it's an interesting moment in the history of technology, because Microsoft used to always have the most popular operating system in the world, Microsoft Windows. Nowadays, the most popular operating system in the world is Android. So this represents Microsoft once again shipping the world's most popular operating system.
They're always thinking, aren't they?
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
Yeah, but I never thought I'd see the day when Microsoft would ship an Android phone. We should pop champagne or do something. Get hammered on beer. I don't know what how do you celebrate
hammered.
This?
No, let's get hammered. We'll do that.
All right, let's do great. That. All right. So enough about Microsoft. Let's talk about Apple. That. What's going on with Apple? They they're having a good time.
Yeah, what's going on with Apple is right. So over at Daring Fireball, John Gruber, he has his latest podcast. He was talking about Apple, and he was at WWDC, and he was talking to a bunch of Apple employees, and he found out that they're all really happy. They said to him,
what happened?
Several employees said to him, you know, John, we're really happy here. We couldn't be happier. The fun is back. You know, everything's fun again. And it's really an odd thing. It's an odd statement. It's an odd, I don't know. Everything's odd about this. It's I didn't realize that Apple employees weren't enjoying their lives at Apple, or that maybe they were really that upset at Apple. And what it doesn't provide, though, in the podcast is real context. So when were things not fun at Apple? Was it when Steve Jobs was in charge and he was, you know, reportedly firing people left and right and people were scurrying out of his way whenever he'd walk down the hallway? Was it after Steve Jobs left and Tim Cook took over and the business seemed a little bit more businesslike? Was it with Scott Forstall when he was let go, the former senior VP, because of, well, a lot of things, I guess, reportedly that he, you know, he wasn't very well liked in the C-suite? What exactly is going on? Now, Gruber says it could be that there's more collaboration going on between the iOS teams and the OS X teams, that they're able to handle some of the more complex and interesting things now rather than the minute and less interesting things in terms of the software and hardware. I don't know what's going on, but it's an interesting thought. Why are suddenly, according to Gruber and according to these employees, why suddenly are all these Apple employees happy and happy to be there when obviously recently they were not?
Well, I've got a lot of friends who work at Apple, and I've talked to them over the years about what it's like to work there. And under Steve Jobs, there was a lot of tension because Steve Jobs would terrify the sort of higher level people who would go, and then there would be a trickle down effect of terror down to the, all levels. And you really, basically, if you got on Jobs' bad side, it was just miserable. Nowadays, Apple's not the hottest company in the world. They're one of the hottest companies. Obviously, they're a hot company. It's a hot brand, hot company, but they're not quite the unstoppable rocket ship that they were 5 years ago. They're a company, frankly, that can lose employees. The economy's better, so there are lots of other jobs in the Valley. That it's so hard to hire good people in the Valley. And if you have Apple on your resume, you are super hireable. So my guess is that Apple's working in subtle ways throughout the company, through the HR department, through the management system, to try to keep employees happier because they could really easily lose them. And the second thing is, just, and this is just my guess, this is how I would feel if I worked at Apple, I'd be pretty excited about the Spaceship Campus. I would want to work at that campus.
Yeah, who wouldn't want to work there?
Here's the fly-through if you're watching the video. This is a video that came out this week of a flyover rendering. It's a computer-generated rendering of the upcoming Spaceship Campus. Buildings are and tech campuses in Silicon Valley are so dull. And this one looks really, really fun and really cool. So I'd be excited about the future if I worked at Apple.
Really? Excited about the future just because of the spaceship or because excited about the entire future of the company?
No, just the spaceship.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I think, though. I was going to say, I was like, really? Really excited about your next iPhone or your iWatch?
Nah,
come on. We want a spaceship.
No, I just want to eat in a really amazing cafeteria. I don't ask for much in life.
Great food.
Well, yeah. Don Reisinger, we talked about earlier this week about the Amazon Fire phone. And at the time, I suggested it was a cool phone that I was somewhat interested in checking out. But after exploring the realities of the phone in detail, I've come to the conclusion that there is no way I'm going to buy this phone, and neither should you. And I'm going to tell you exactly why.
Me?
The reason is that this device and the services that support it and the technology behind it represents literally and by far the biggest personal data harvesting collection machine ever shipped anywhere. This thing can really harvest a lot of data. And in and of itself, that doesn't concern me. If it was with a company that was really transparent about what they're doing with that data, I would probably be one of those people saying, stop the techno panic, as Jeff Jarvis likes to say. You know, we can trust them with our data or whatever, but they're not being transparent about it. So, for example, let's start with a couple of the features. Firefly recognizes things. You push a single button, and it will, if there's a song playing, it'll recognize the song. If you point it at a product, it'll recognize the product. And then there's a convenient buy button where you can buy that song or buy that product from Amazon. Okay, that sounds like a really great feature, a single hardware button on the phone that recognizes anything. But what's happening there, really? When you're going to recognize a song, that button still takes a picture, and the picture is uploaded to Amazon servers, and they keep that picture. They've admitted that they're going to keep the picture in perpetuity, and it can be scanned. So you hold it up, and I happen to hold it up, and there's somebody in the picture. That person's face is now on the Amazon server. Likewise, if you're going to take a picture of a product, it records a sound. It records audio. That audio is uploaded, even if you never intended or weren't thinking about audio when you press that button. And they, again, they, and they also, by the way, upload the GPS coordinates every time you press that button. And so Amazon is not being super forthright about what they're going to do with all this information. For example, all these companies want personal data that allows them to give you better contextual advertising. So let's say, for example, you take a picture of a magazine and because you want more information about that magazine. That audio picks up what's on the TV. So now Amazon knows what you watch on TV. You do that 100 times and it knows what you repeatedly watch. It knows what your interests are. If you're always watching cooking shows, for example, maybe you're going to get cooking ads for cooking stuff on Amazon because of something that you didn't even deliberately put into their system to be harvested. So that's one concern. The other one is dynamic perspective. Now, dynamic perspective is this feature where you can hold the phone and it looks like kind of fake 3D. Pretty cool. There are four extra cameras on the front plus a regular camera on the front. And this would be a perfect system if you wanted to take pictures of someone's face. I don't think Amazon is actually taking a picture of your face when you use dynamic perspective, but this would be a perfect system for doing that. What I want from Amazon is I want them to come out and say, you know what? Yes, we have a phone that always knows when your face is in the camera's view, and we could easily capture a picture and upload it to our service to build the ultimate face recognition database on all of our customers. They could do that. They're probably not doing it, but I want them to come out and say, we will never do this, ever. I want them to say that. They haven't said. They're being very secretive about all this stuff. Cloud storage. They have said that their unlimited cloud storage feature, which we talked about, you can take all the pictures in the world. Those are not combined with the Firefly pictures that are taken. They're kept separately. And the personal photos that you upload to their cloud are not scanned. And they've said that they're not going to scan those. What they haven't said is that they will never scan them. So you can imagine 2 years of using an Amazon Fire phone with all these pictures of your family and your activities and your vacations and everything that happens in your life. And then a couple of years later, they're like, you know what? We're going to go ahead and scan those. They've given themselves a right to do that with their privacy policies. And so what I want from Amazon is for them to say, we will never scan those photos. Their Silk browser. Why did Amazon come out with a Silk browser? Right? There are lots of great browsers. The Silk browser is a bad browser. It's not a good browser. And it does something weird. It caches all the web pages like an ISP does, not like browsers do, but like an ISP does. And then that enables them to scan and harvest far more information about your web surfing habits than cookies ever could. Now, they specifically say that they don't attach the data they harvest with the people who are surfing the web. But I want to know what they're doing with that data and how they're using it. They haven't said. They keep that secret. All this data that they do harvest and all the data that they could harvest in the future can be combined with Amazon data, which means they know who you buy gifts for. They know your address. Just a zip code alone tells them a lot about your socioeconomic status. They know your interests. They know what you read. They know what you watch. They know what your browsing habits are. Even when you don't buy things, they're harvesting information about your interests. So until Amazon comes out and says, okay, we admit that we've created this device that is the greatest personal data collection engine in the history of mankind. Therefore, we're going to tell you exactly what we're doing with that data now and what we're going to do in the future. Nobody should buy this phone because we can't trust Amazon unless they're going to be transparent about what they do. So that's my diatribe of the week.
Wow. Wow, Mike, you just went crazy over there. And I agree with everything you just said. And here's something else we need to add. And I like this special comment, by the way. Let's have this every week.
We should do this every week.
Yeah. We should do this every week. You say something and then I'll say something like that. Well, no, actually this time I'm agreeing. I should do the other thing. The counterpoint. Point, counterpoint. But
Mike, no. You ignorant slut. I don't know if you're all the
Oh, yeah. No, of course. SNL, baby. So anyway, so where was I? Oh, yeah, that's right. Ignorant slut. Okay. I think what you're really pointing to here, and this is something that I think is very, very interesting. When we look at Apple and Google and Microsoft, we're all quick to point out privacy issues. We're all quick to point out all of the problems we have with these companies as it relates to privacy and security and all of this. But Amazon has been getting a free pass for a very long time. And even with this device, no one's really paying attention to all of those potential issues. Amazon kind of gets a free ride in a lot of ways. It's the company that we don't think about all the time, but we buy their products and, you know, now we're subject to all of their, like you said, draconian policies. Now, here's the big question. is there going to be a change now that there's a smartphone? Smartphones are big business now. Is there going to be a change in that where people get this device and a lot more people start calling out Amazon on privacy and suddenly it's called out on the carpet to say, look, you guys need to be thinking a lot more about privacy? Amazon is not called out for that. Amazon is not in any way a company that people say in their first breath, we need to worry about privacy. And I think you make a great point, Mike. I mean, Google, if this were a Google device, an Apple device, it would be all over the place.
That's exactly right. And remember that Amazon invented this whole thing long before Google ever dreamed up personalized search, which is a data harvesting result. Long before they came out with Google Plus, long before Facebook came along and decided to harvest all your data, Amazon was giving you specific recommendations based on what you bought. What they did was you'd buy a book or you'd browse some books, and it would have this incredibly sophisticated algorithm. This is a dozen years ago, probably, where they would say, okay, the people who liked those books also like these other books, and therefore, here are those other books that those people like you would tend to buy. That's the kind of contextual advertising, and Amazon was doing it first. And I just don't like how secretive this company is. And I agree with you. Nobody's calling them out, partly because Amazon is mainly a U.S. business. And a lot of the press around challenging data harvesting comes from abroad. It comes from Germany. It comes from the international press. So Apple and Google are international companies. And Amazon is, for the most part, an American company. And the American press tends to be less aggressive about pursuing these ideas. And so that's another thing that Amazon has on its side if it wants to sort of keep a lot of information secret. I mean, this company is secretive about everything. How many Kindles have shipped? They will never say. They haven't said. They won't say. They keep it all secret. So, you know, again, I think I agree with you, and we're going to be holding them to the fire on privacy going forward. I'm not the kind of person who's really freaked out about contextual advertising and data harvesting. I don't have a big problem with Google, for example, which is one of the most aggressive companies in harvesting data, because they tend to be a little bit more on the transparent side. But Amazon, I don't know, I'm going to write a column about this next week at some point, I'm pretty sure. But if you compare the flack that Google has gotten for Google Glass over that device is an invasion of privacy versus the flack that Amazon is giving over the Google Fire, it's night and day. All the flack is against Google Glass. The Daily Show is ripping it and mocking it. And yet Google Glass is a terrible invader of privacy. You can totally tell when people are taking pictures and video. And besides, why would I want a video of people standing on the corner or whatever? It's not good at recording audio. It's not secret. Whereas this Amazon Fire phone, you pick it up to record music at Starbucks, and you're taking a picture of everybody in the place and uploading it to Amazon servers. And they're keeping that picture for years and doing stuff with it. They don't tell us what they're doing with it. So I think that it's time to back off on Google Glass a bit and turn up the heat on Google Fire, no pun intended. And so anyway, that's my rant of the week. But we better wrap up the show because we are
sobering thought of the week. That's it. Sobering the sobering theme of the week. Yeah. Your privacy is officially dead. I mean, look,
that's right.
It's over. It's game over. But sorry, let's wrap this thing up. I always hold you up, Mike. I'm the guy who keeps you along. We got to do this thing.
Let's do it. So I do want to thank you, by the way, for coming on again Friday. You were on yesterday. You're on today, and you're going to be on again next Friday and every Friday. Jeez. So you're our Friday co-anchor. So I really appreciate
that. I'm the Friday guy.
Have a great weekend, Don. And
you too.
Stick around in the chat room. If you're listening to this live, come into the chat room. We're going to have a nice chat in there with everybody after the show is over. And we want you to subscribe to Tech News Today. Why should you subscribe? Because it's a great idea, and there's a million ways to do it. But the show comes right to you. So as you're walking around town or you're doing the dishes or you're doing whatever you're doing, you can listen to the show and become super informed on the tech news of the day. You can also subscribe on YouTube, youtube.com/TechNewsToday. And please follow us on Twitter, Tech News Today TV. And send us some comment and email. You can comment on Twitter or Google Plus using the hashtag Tech News Today. Send us an email, tnt@twit.tv, or leave us voicemail by calling 260-SHOW. Also, don't miss our evening newscast, Tech News Tonight, at 4 p.m. Pacific tonight and every weeknight. My name is Mike Elgin. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you Monday.